Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Christine Erickson. I am the president for South Dakota Trucking Association and South Dakota Auto Dealers Association. This is the official podcast of both associations called Driveline. Today, I'm so excited to welcome Congressman Dusty Johnson on our show. Thank you so much. We know you are so busy. There's never anything going on ever in DC. So for you to take a few moments and spend some time and talk cars, trucks, and maybe even some personal things. We're thankful for your time. So welcome on our show.
Thanks for having me. The official podcast of both associations. This is kind of a big deal for me.
Such a big deal. Well, truly, look, here's the deal. This is our only third podcast, so we're fresh and new. And so to have a big hitter, a heavy hitter like yourself is really important on our show. Hopefully,
Who are the other guests? You got to tell me.
Well, we had our chairman for the auto dealers, and then I had two state execs for Arizona and Nevada that joined from trucking industries. And so we talked all things trucking those days, EVs, batteries, all of that. So now we get the political spin and see how the sausage is made. So Dusty, thank you again for being here. You're no stranger to politics. You're no stranger to public service. Just for the sake of our listeners, tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in politics and all the offices that you've served in over the handful of years.
I've been in Congress 5 years. Before that, I was the co-owner of an engineering firm right here in Mitchell, South Dakota. Now they've got about 450 employees. They do business in about 40 states. And I was the head of the business unit that went in and helped real small rural broadband providers provide better service. These aren't companies with 10,000 employees. They'd be more likely companies with 10 or 100 employees. And it was great. Did that for 4 or 5 years. Prior to that, I was chief of staff to then Governor Dennis Dugard in South Dakota. And then before that, I was a statewide elected official with working on the Public Utilities Commission. And through all of that stuff, Christine, infrastructure was a major theme, whether it was transmission lines or roads or bridges. Those are the things that help an economy move. So infrastructure has always been a passion. That's one of the reasons I worked so hard to get onto the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in Congress, where I'm now a leader, particularly in issues related to highways.
Perfect. And, you know, and that's really important to us in the trucking and car industry, because that's how we travel. So we are so grateful that our lone congressman is in a position that is super helpful for our industries anyways. So that leads me to believe we're going to keep it casual today. We're going to talk about some of the things that are important to you, not necessarily trucks and cars, but maybe some of the things that are important to you as well. So, you know, as our lone congressman, talk about the challenges that is for South Dakota. I mean, I think it's great. We've got you, you're accessible, you're available. What are the challenges being one congressman, one representative in our whole state? And how do you navigate that with maybe some of your colleagues?
I think part of the problem is that the House is such an urban body. Of course, we all get the Senate. Every state gets 2 United States senators, and most every state has some rural areas. I mean, even Chuck Schumer from New York, I mean, upstate has got lots of farms and lots of empty acres, lots of highways. He's got to care about rural things, even representing New York. That isn't true in the House. There are 10 members of the U.S. House who represent just Long Island, a part of the New York City metro area. Right. And frankly, areas like Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, areas with lots of highways and lots of acres, we have about half that representation, all of those states combined compared to just Long Island. Right. So I spent a lot of time making sure my colleagues understand that transportation is different in South Dakota, that trucking, it looks and feels a little different than what they assume. And frankly, trying to remind them that their cities can't exist without the kinds of connectivity and the kinds of trucking that Middle America provides, to say nothing of the food and the energy. Out of 435 members of the U.S. House, there are only 29 that represent districts that are mostly rural by population.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Well, and it's so important that you are, you know, making those connections with your colleagues. And I've been out to visit you talking about our issues that are important to us. And, you know, just seeing the level of respect that you've gained over the last 5 years is really, really, it's really encouraging because, you know, we worry we only have three people. And so to have you there and be so connected is so important and so intentional. And so I thank you for that and your intentional time to representing South Dakota so well. Let's turn into maybe some of the hot topics that are going on in DC right now. We just saw the president gave his speech, which came with some backlash from some of the Republicans, as well as even some of the Democrats had some pause for concern. Talk about just what your priorities are and maybe how they differ or how we are moving as a country. You know, we talk about all this dysfunction all the time in DC, but there is good happening. So let's highlight some of those positive things that that you are working on and things such as the MOVE Act and some of the other priorities that you have.
There are good things happening. I mean, every week when we're in DC, there are bills that pass out with a couple hundred Democrat votes and a couple hundred Republican votes. Those don't get a lot of attention, but they are disproportionately in areas where I spend a lot of time, agriculture, rural development, infrastructure, transportation, those are areas where you can still get R's and D's to agree. And so, yeah, I mean, I passed major legislation that helped to clean up the supply chain that meant that foreign flagged ocean carriers weren't able to discriminate against American goods as much as they had been, making sure that truckers had an opportunity to be able to haul more, trying to cut back on some of the overregulation that so many industries deal with, trying to make it easier to site American energy projects, being successful in putting into place better work requirements for able-bodied people on welfare programs. So there are good things happening. With regard to the State of the Union address that you mentioned, Christine, I mean, I was pretty disappointed. Obviously, there were some things I agreed with, but the president just promised trillions of dollars in additional spending. I mean, and I get it. It's popular to be able to stand there and tell everybody, I'm going to give you and other Americans $400 a month so you can pay your mortgage and your rent. That makes you popular. Being Santa Claus, giving stuff away is always popular. But that costs trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. We're already upside down $34 trillion. The president seemed to insinuate that higher taxes on rich people would close that gap. He wants a new 25% tax on billionaires. And reasonable people can disagree whether that's the right approach or not. But let's be honest about the impact. The president's proposed tax would generate us $50 billion a year. That's a lot of money.
Right.
But we're not upside down $50 billion a year. We're upside down $1,000 billion a year. And that's going to get worse with all the spending he proposed. So I thought it was time for a little fiscal responsibility. Obviously, the president disagreed. And then one other area I quickly would mention that I was so disappointed in. I mean, the president barely mentioned the border.
You're right.
3 million people illegally cross our southern border in the last 3 years.
Right.
And I mean, I took Sheriff Fred Lamphere from Butte County with me because he's been a leader in raising these issues. And neither the sheriff nor I heard anything that we wanted to hear about the southern border.
Right. So that's interesting, you know, talking about the border, you know, people in South Dakota, you know, sometimes will say, well, why do we care? We're so far away. Why should we care as South Dakota? I mean, I clearly have my own opinion, but asking you, why right. should we care as South Dakotans about the border? How does that impact South Dakota directly?
Well, we know that 95% of the fentanyl and most of the meth that comes into this state comes across the southern border. Mm-hmm. We know that's all controlled by the drug cartels, the same people who are controlling all of this movement of human bodies. Last year, the drug cartels made $30 billion by hauling humans. That's money that they use to buy more weapons, haul more drugs, and greater destabilize states like South Dakota. I would be surprised if a single one of your viewers wasn't touched in some way by drug overdose or drug addiction. Most of us have seen first or secondhand how meth and fentanyl just destroy families. They destroy communities. And it does not have to be this way. If we had a southern border that was under control, we would be able to put more of those border agents on drug interdiction duty rather than paperwork duty, trying to process 13 or 15,000 migrants a day.
Wow. Yeah. And I think that's, those are real numbers, real statistics. And it's something that we should all be concerned about, because it's taking jobs away from my family and your family potentially into the future. So something we definitely want to be careful of.
Well, and I don't mind people who want to come to this country and work hard. We need them. I mean, you'd know the numbers better than I would, but we're probably 80 or 100,000 truck drivers short in this country. We're 50,000 doctors short. We're probably 50,000 welders short. We're 200,000 teachers short. Like, we need hardworking people. My problem is not the jobs. My problem is that we're a country that honors the rule of law.
Right.
And listen, if you want to come to America for a better life, you're not a refugee, mm-hmm. right? You can only claim asylum if you're a refugee who is at legitimate risk of losing your life because of your gender, your ethnicity, your religion. And we should accept refugees. I wouldn't have wanted to have turned away the Jews fleeing Nazi Germany, but the folks entering illegally are not refugees. They want a better economic life. And I get it. There's a different line for that, though.
Right.
We want them, but they got to fill out the right paperwork. They got to stand in the right line. It is too easy to get here illegally, and it is too hard to get here legally. And we should fix both those problems.
Yes, couldn't agree more. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. We're going to pivot a little bit. One thing that you've been an absolute champion on is the Black Hills Forest, and hosting just a few weeks ago a forum with some of your colleagues, as well as a couple of my log hauler members that sat on a forum, really highlighting the issues with the lack of care for our Black Hills Forest and some of the things that we heard from some of your colleagues in California that wiped out towns. Talk about this priority for you, because this is huge for our state as a whole. This is workforce development. This is maintaining our forestry, making sure that the pine beetle doesn't take over. We don't wipe out towns by forest fires, and that we are operating in an appropriate manner. Just recently, the governor just had stated she's going to bring in some help and get on some of the private land and help in those ways. I'm not sure the timeline of that, but I'd just like you to talk a little bit about your priority, why you felt it was important to have this forum, and what it looks like that we can really push the feds to clean up our forest.
First off, I would mention it was a good reminder to me about how active and engaged the members of both of your associations are.
Really,
anytime
are.
I'm in an area where I don't think Christine Erickson would have anything to do with it, there I'm running into one of your board members or one of your major members. It's incredible how a well-managed forest is a healthy forest.
Right.
And folks like Robert Christensen, one of your members, I mean, he's a guy who for decades has been willing to go into that forest, appropriately thin, treat, manage that forest. I mean, these aren't clear cuts. I mean, these are selectively thinning out the forest so that it can grow and it can be healthy. And we don't have all of that fuel for fire in there. And so there I am. I've got, it was a pretty big deal. I mean, I had the chairman of the forestry subcommittee, Doug LaMalfa from California, the vice chair of the whole agriculture committee, Austin Scott of Georgia. They came out because they understood how important the Black Hills was to all of us. I mean, these are the places where my family makes our best memories, where so many of your viewers' families make their best memories. And we don't want the fire to burn up. And the Forest Service has made it really hard for us to go in and get the timber that we know is out there. No one is asking for permission to take more timber than the forest can support.
Correct.
And the Forest Service has year in and year out, they said, oh, we get it. We're going to get you 120,000 CCF. We'll go ahead and put that up for sale so that you can go out and you can bid on those and then get out there and get that timber out of there. But they never get to 120,000 CCF. And so far in this fiscal year, so going back like 5 months, they've only gotten like 5,000 CCF out there.
Yeah.
And what that's done is it's shut down the Hill City Mill almost certainly forever. And if we don't get back on track, it's going to shut down the Spearfish Mill as well. That will not only be hundreds of jobs lost, but it will mean all of the expertise and all of the infrastructure and all the equipment we use to keep that forest healthy will be gone. Mm-hmm. And we're going to turn that forest into a tinderbox, and it's going to be prone to fire and to disease. That's going to be bad news.
It is. It really is. And, you know, this is what's really important to note, too, is I have members that are retiring now because there's just not enough work for them to do. I have a couple members that have changed their trucks to being able to haul gravel instead of timber. And so by the time the federal government does get their act together, are we going to have enough haulers to get in there and harvest the appropriate amount? I would say yes, they always show up. They know what's right. But right now they're making the hard decisions for their families to making sure that they can make ends meet and then maybe haul gravel instead for a while because there's just not enough work for them to do. And then you're putting the rest of really the communities at risk. When you look at the reach of the Spearfish Mill, you know, my car dealers are certainly concerned as well because where do you buy your cars? Right there. So if those people don't have jobs, they're not going to be buying cars. It's a trickle-down effect. It's a trickle-down effect into our folks that serve electricity to the mills as well. It's a really, really big problem. And for anyone who doesn't think that this is a statewide problem is wrong. This may be West River, but it's really across the entire state. So thank you for being the champion of that. There's been some really great publications out from that event, as well as a press release that you did. We are excited to repost some of that information and making sure that our members know that you are there to fight for them. So that's been really good. I'm going to pivot to cars for a little bit because, you know, I do cars and trucks. So let's talk EVs. You and I are very like-minded. And one of the big issues that I have completely just been beating the drum on is anytime it's government driven, it's not good. Let's have it be consumer driven. And we're seeing the federal government really pushing, we're going to be all EV by 2035. And we have a lot of other states following that same. In South Dakota, our adoption rate is 0.2%. We're just not early adopters in South Dakota. And so talk about a little bit about what you're hearing in the DC area. What do you foresee happening? Are there bills being dropped? We have big concerns. We'll sell whatever our customers want, but we have big concerns when we're talking about getting rid of the ICE vehicles.
Listen, you said it exactly right. I mean, I would just say, yeah, I agree with what she said. At some point, if it's market driven, great. If you as a viewer are driving an EV, good on you.
Right.
And if that, and listen, clearly EVs are going to get better. Right now, we know that they're not a good fit for South Dakota. So many of us drive long distances. And frankly, cold weather is incredibly hard on batteries. That's not to say that some years down the road, things aren't going to be better. And if EV manufacturers can go buy market share in the broader marketplace, good on them. Go make a ton of money. Maybe that's the best long-term solution. But I don't like it when we're picking winners and losers. I spent a long time yesterday with the CEO of our nation's largest maker of ethanol. Their product is 50% less carbon intensive than gasoline. Mm. So if what you care about is carbon, then you have to acknowledge the huge role that biofuels can play in reducing that carbon footprint.
Right.
And by the way, we've got all of that infrastructure in place. Mm-hmm. We've got the convenience stores with the pumps. We've got the internal combustion engine that can burn it. And we know that ethanol is getting less carbon intensive every year because of better technologies, more breakthrough. The fact that we have an administration that so completely rejects the role of biofuels, I think is really problematic, particularly when we already have that infrastructure. What we don't have is the grid we need to go all EV at the pace that the administration has been calling for. By some estimates, we have half the grid we would need. I mean, billions upon billions upon billions of dollars of investment. I mean, who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay for all of these new vehicles to replace the internal combustion engine? I just don't think the administration's thought this through. And so I want to thank your members, Christine, and the members of the National Association. I mean, wasn't it like 5,000 auto dealers or some crazy number who stepped up to say to the administration, we'll make money selling whatever we can sell, but have you thought this through? That was the right message.
Right. Yes, it is. You know, one of the other things that is really heavy in our auto industry is really the overreach and really, you know, being a former legislator myself, you and I can probably see eye to eye on this, is when some of the federal departments maybe overstep the rulemaking authority. So instead of saying, hey, Dusty, you're the congressman, you make the rules and the laws, instead they say, well, I can make this rule. So what I'm talking about is the FTC shopping rule and how problematic that will be for consumers and how long it will take for consumers to buy a car, all the paperwork, all the regulation. And oh, by the way, no one in Congress has voted on this. This was a rule that was just dreamt up and wanted to be done by the FTC. So how as associations and how as just the average American, how can we push back in to some of those departments and saying, wait, that's not your role. This is the role of Congress. They make the laws, not you. And so we're struggling with that as an association to push back enough. And we can only write so many letters to the FTC before they get thrown in a drawer or in a burn pile, who knows. But that's why we elect folks like you to represent us and make those decisions. Do you see any movement with the FTC or some of those rulemaking authorities? Talk to me a little bit about that. I know I just kind of threw a whole lot at you right there, but.
Well, the problem is, it's not just one or two or 100 rulemakings. It's every agency every day.
Right.
I mean, you have an administration who felt like they should have jurisdiction over the waters of the U.S. and defining waters of the U.S. as basically any wet spot in a farmer's field. You've got an administration that is changing the rules about how health insurance and pharmacies work together, imposing major new costs across people who buy health insurance. We have an administration that is increasingly trying to decide what kind of stoves people use, what kind of cars they drive, and what kind of fees credit card companies can charge if you don't get around to paying your bill.
Right.
And the cumulative effect of all of those things is a much, much bigger and much more intrusive government. Mm-hmm. And so I guess before answering your question, I have to put out there into the ether for the rest of the universe to listen to. It seems like things that the far right and the far left and everybody in between can agree on is that there are times they get the sense that their central government in Washington, D.C. has too much power. Mm-hmm. And the left was really concerned when Donald Trump was using it, and the right has been really concerned when Joe Biden has been using it.
Yeah.
We just need to remember that any power we give to that administrative factory in Washington, D.C. is power that will be used in a way that is antithetical to our beliefs.
Right.
And so what do we do about it? I think it is harder in a state like South Dakota, where all three of our members of Congress are Republicans. So in general, are supportive of a less regulatory approach.
Right.
So, you know, when your members talk to us, Christine, they're getting nodded heads and we'll sign on to any letters and,
yeah,
you know, we'll call the White House and we'll complain as well. If your members have family members or employees in other states, have them reach out to their members of Congress who maybe don't share my views,
right,
your views on regulation, because there are some really well-intentioned folks on the other side of the aisle who I think will listen to how negative the impacts of some of these things can be.
Right.
And if we're going to get this country headed in the right direction, it is going to take some of us on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, agree. And I do appreciate your approach to that, because it takes understanding where somebody is on the other side of an issue. You may not still agree, but at least you can understand and have a dialogue that's different than shouting and yelling. So I've always appreciated about that about you. And, you know, when I came into the legislature, you were the chief of staff and a mentor to me and took me under your wing. And, you know, a lot of times I say I'm successful because of all that you did teach me. And so I certainly want to say thank you for that.
Christine, I get into enough trouble with my own errors. I don't need to be tied to yours as well.
I don't make any. I'm just kidding. Oh, I love it. Okay, so just to lighten the moment, I appreciate all that we've talked about. I like to do a little lightning round. Just keeping it light. So just to let our viewers know maybe a little bit more about Dusty. Right now, what does Dusty Johnson drive?
I drive a grand, like a Jeep, maybe. Do you remember what it's called? It's a Jeep something. It's not a Cherokee. I used to have a Jeep Cherokee.
Jeep Laredo?
But it's a Jeep. No, not a Laredo. It's Compass. It's not a Compass. Anyway, I drive a Jeep.
Okay, Dusty drives a Jeep. What was your
very brand new car? In my Jeep Cherokee, I just had a rollover on some icy roads.
Oh, no.
Pulled the car, messed up my shoulder, and so I am getting accustomed to this brand new car.
This did not make it into the news. This might be like breaking news right now.
I put it in my weekly column. You didn't read it. That hurts my feeling.
Apparently not. Okay, what was the very first car you drove?
I worked at the Ford dealership in Pierre, which had been Harding Motors. It was Capital Motors when I worked there. It's got a new name now. And I drove a little Geo something.
Okay, Geo Tracker, Geo Storm.
No. Like that, it was a Nissan Sentra. That's what it was.
All right. Okay, you have kids that drive. What do your kids drive?
My oldest drives a Chrysler 200.
There you go.
My middle child, who's 15, drives a Ford Fusion, maybe? I think that's what that is.
Just scary time if you think about our youth driving. It's just always that every time until they get home, you're like, okay, you're home.
Yeah, the 12-year-old drives a non-motorized scooter around.
There you go. There you go. I like it. Okay, favorite place, favorite hidden gem that you like to take your family for dinner?
For dinner?
This should be
Increasingly, we have been going to a place in Mitchell, south of the interstate, called El Columpio. It's a casual Mexican joint.
Nice. All right. Favorite vacation place outside of South Dakota?
We like national parks and theme parks. So in a perfect world, we'd alternate those. You know, Yellowstone, Disney World, Disneyland, Zion, something like that.
There you go. Okay. Favorite date night for your wife?
I mean, could we just have a little quiet without the kids causing problems? That would be great.
Right? Exactly. Right? I like that. Well, I just wanted to just tip into a little bit of who Dusty Johnson is outside of Congress.
It's really terrifying when you think about it.
It is not terrifying.
Don't plumb too deep. There are places I don't like to talk about.
Yeah, well, I won't go too deep for you. So what else do you want to talk about? Any closing remarks, anything? I thank you for your time. I know you're so crazy busy all the time. And for you to give us some time here is really important. What do you want to leave us with? Any big things you're working on? I know you're up for re-election. We all know that. So you're working the campaign trail. Outside of that and representing all of your constituents and the work you're working on, what else do you want to let us in on?
Oh, we've talked about the big stuff. You know, I voted 82 times to secure the border. I voted against $13 trillion in spending, but we've talked about both of those issues a lot. We talked a lot about the supply chains and my bills that I got passed. So let me leave you with this. Two great associations, one great executive director. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for listening. Dusty, we will see you soon in DC. We come out a couple times a year. Our members always love sitting down and chatting with you. So thank you, sir, for your time and best of luck in DC.
Happy driving.